Welcome to the Growth Hacking Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Ivan Palomino. This podcast is about thought-provoking ideas to scale up and growth hack performing and human-centric work cultures. My guests are experts on mindsets, skills, and science behind work cultures. I hope you enjoy this episode.
This is quite interesting. Do you know that what is the global population with one of the highest growth in the world? Well, it is the digital nomads. Pre-pandemic, there was an estimation of 7 million of digital nomads around the world. In 2021, it was 15 million. In 2023, it became 35 million. So can you imagine, in four years, it has grown five times. What is specific about this population is that they are not only the kind of most of them are highly tech savvy, but they are super creative. And many times they mentioned that the reason why they did it, they move on into this path, is because of their purpose. And I got you a sample to understand what does it take for a corporation to attract this type of talent. I have as a guest today, Austin Reed, which is a seasoned digital nomad with over 8 years of global explorations around 26 countries. He's the founder of Horizon Dev. It is a software development agency. He helps business in streamlining processes and in automation. So he's kind of the guru about automation. Austin, thank you very much for making it today. I wanted to ask you, you know, I heard that the start of your company was like a crazy story with robbery, passion, and I wanted to know a little bit more about the start of your company.
Absolutely. I want to start off by saying thanks a lot for having me here. I really appreciate being on the podcast. That's a crazy story. So I was in Brazil. When I was in Brazil, I met this guy named Mateus. And fast forward a couple of years, you know, I'm in Bali, it's the middle of coronavirus. I'm just kind of going through my day-to-day, you know, motions. At that time, I was a musician. I was recording and composing music for other musicians and stuff. And Mateus messaged me, he's like, hey, I got all my stuff robbed. He was just complaining because he just got robbed, right? And I was like, man, like, I gotta help this guy out. What do I do? So what happened was he was going to go pay his rent. He had his laptop with him. And while he was on the street, somebody walked up behind him with a gun, pulled a gun on him and took all his stuff. Right. And so, yeah, it was nuts. And so he's all texting me and he's complaining about this. And I'm like, God, I gotta help this guy out. Well, he has a master's in cybersecurity. And so I had this brilliant idea. I'm like, what if I sell a website or something and have him like code it, and maybe we could share the money and we could recoup the cost, because, you know, like it would probably take him like, I don't know, like 8-10 months, maybe more, to save up everything he's already lost. And like, I don't know how he's gonna pay rent, you know, like, just didn't really make sense, you know? So, cause I mean, the salary in Brazil is like really cheap. It's like $1,000 a month, like maximum. I think he was making like 600 or something. And so I sent him a couple $100. I'm like, bro, go get a laptop and I'm gonna try to sell a website. We're gonna make something happen, right? So we found this crappy laptop on Facebook Marketplace, which ended up breaking like a couple weeks later anyway. But he got the laptop, and within about like a week and a half, I had sold our first website, which was a WordPress website, technology we don't work with anymore, for $750. And it was pretty cool. We split it. It recovered like a good portion of what he lost, not everything, obviously. But then, you know, things kept going. I kept selling websites, and one thing led to another. Like, I don't know, maybe two and a half months later, he was like, bro, I'm just gonna like quit my job and do this. And I was like, man, wait, so now I'm like responsible for him, you know? And like, It was cool, but at the same time, it was like really scary, you know, because like one of your best friends is now like relying on you to make sure that you can do sales. And at the same time, I'm like I still had like an income, but it's like he just gave up his entire income to do this thing with me that I'm like half in, half not in, you know, kind of thing. But then the rest is history. We just kept developing, getting better, learning, made a bunch of mistakes, a bunch of mistakes. And over time, it's grown into a team, and now we're not doing the same things we used to. Our jobs have changed, and it's all I do for income. It's all he does, and it's crazy how it's evolved. It's really crazy, to be honest.
Austin, so today your team, is it based in a specific location or is also like it can be anywhere in the world?
It's anywhere. We've got a designer in Turkey who's amazing. We got some people in Angola, Africa. They're really good. We got some people in the Philippines. We got some in Brazil. We just hired a manager here in Argentina. Mateos travels with me. He's a digital nomad too now, and so he travels with me. He's here in Argentina with me. Yeah, it's all over the world, man. All over the
That's
world.
good. So taking this trend, so trend or fad, we can discuss all over, but in your opinion, what's the main reason why people decides to go nomad?
Well, I did it kind of by accident. It was like, so here's another story for you. So I went on foreign exchange when I was in high school, and I met this guy named Tincho, and we played a lot of music. It was our dream to like play concerts together. And the idea was he would come to the US and we'd do concerts together. And fast forward, I was in university, and I realized like he's not coming to the US. If we're gonna do concerts together, I have to go somewhere. So I saved up, I sold everything I had, and I went to Argentina. And that's kind of how I started this whole digital nomad story years and years ago. So my reason's a little different than other people. Once I left, I realized that like it's a lot easier to maintain, save, and grow when your bills are like half. Right? So if I can make money in dollars and spend in pesos, that's like a huge advantage. That gives me time and freedom to grow and develop myself in ways other people don't have opportunities to do. I think reasons why people nowadays they want to become digital nomads is because they, first of all, you want to see the world, see new cultures, eat new food, obviously, right? Learn new languages, like that's amazing. I also think it's freedom. You know, having the freedom to be able to wake up and say, you know, like I'm kind of tired of this city. Why don't I see where else I can go? Like, also having the ability to control your schedule. I notice a lot of digital nomads that I know, they all control their schedules. You know, they don't like they, yes, they work for jobs and stuff, but the job doesn't really dictate you have to work 9 to 5. It's not like that. The job dictates you have to work 40 hours a week and this needs to be done. They build their schedule within that framework and get work done when they need to. And I find that actually makes people a lot more productive. So I think there's a lot of reasons why. Another reason is like people want to retire, you know? That's always a good reason to become a digital nomad. My parents are working on doing that now. I'm trying to help them with that transition. It's kind of hard for them because it's a different generation, but yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons why that happens.
Austin, you have mentioned that that allows you also to decide on your own how do you want to grow and develop. And that's super interesting because, you know, the co corporations are investing a hell of a lot of money and in development of their employees. But I have the gut feelings that, I mean, the decisions of what they push to employees is not what employees really want or the way they learn. What do you do when you, what do you mean, in fact, when you say grow and develop? So do you take I don't know, mindfulness courses early in the morning? Do you take whatever online thing that you want to pick up? Do you watch YouTube videos? What do you do?
I mean, all of the above. I listen to a lot of podcasts about special forces and their mindsets. like Jocko Willink. He has a really good podcast. I listen to a lot of Andrew Huberman, who has a lot of podcasts about like neuroplasticity and how to optimize your body and brain and stuff. I find that really interesting. Read a lot of books. Yes, watch a lot of YouTube. I have a lot of mentors that help me. I'm a big proponent of finding someone who's a lot smarter than you and just sitting down and listening and having them help you with things. All kinds of different things, like not only about mindset, but also like about like things I'm interested in, like music, you know, like I'll get a music course and I'll learn how to mix and master a little bit better. Or like with fitness, like I have a Muay Thai trainer that comes out and trains me, and helps me get better, you know, fitness wise. So I think it's just kind of evolves into like and what it is you want to do, because like all of a sudden you're outside of the structure of like there's no school, there's no work, there's no like you have to be here between this and this. Nobody's really dictating to you what you should learn. And I think a lot of people think, oh, then I'm just gonna sit on the beach and drink martinis and watch Netflix the whole time or something. But what I think they don't realize is once you do that for like a month or two, you're gonna get really bored. Like really bored, you know? And at that point it's like, okay, well, what are you interested in? How do you feel like you could grow? And naturally, I think you'll find that you'll start to seek out more information in those buckets that fill your cup. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like this, how you describe that the focus on personal growth, it is about yourself. So it can be your passions like music, it can be something that will help you out to explore, I mean, to complement your skills, like you mentioned podcasts or having coaches, or I mean, these are the type of things that usually corporations are not investing on. They go and tell you, hey, you want to be a manager? So go and attend this 3 days course about how to be a manager. Instead of, is it the right timing? Is it the way that you learn? Is it the right approach? Can we get out of this box or file that we have created about how to lead people in the corporation, throw it out and say, hey, go and learn from a podcast, and because there is going to be different perspectives so that you become a genuine person in at work. And that self-development that it is directed to you is kind of the fuel also to create this sense of curiosity, the sense of curiosity that then will make you, okay, I'm going to dig how search how to do a specific technical skill that I don't know now, because you are motivated, because you feel good with yourself before learning. So it's first the human, and then the technical skills come because of, out of curiosity. That I have the impression now that it is like that. Now, if we go to the core of what we have been discussing about the topic of today's episode, what would you say it would take for corporations to attract? No, let me rephrase it. Is there any difference between attracting like the traditional talent, that fresh university degree, or getting him out from another corporation, and attracting a digital nomad? Do you see any difference?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of differences. Number one, a digital nomad is going to, they're probably going to expect you to respect their time a little bit more, right? So instead of you dictating to them, okay, the interview is tomorrow at 3, it's going to be more like, okay, when do you have time for an interview? Let's schedule one in. You know what I mean? The interview process is going to be entirely different, right? Because it's not presential. So right off the bat, it's an entirely different process. Then when it comes to, I mean, there's a lot of differences, man.
Are they ready? Are corporations ready to go and attack these 35, maybe 40 million digital nomads who are highly creative and digitally savvy? Are they ready?
I think some are, some aren't. Like, 'cause there's some problems, right? Because like all of a sudden the 9 to 5 goes out the window. So you're gonna have to have some type of time tracking, production tracking, metrics that go on. Like, yeah, companies track production, but usually when it's presential, it's a little bit different. When somebody's far away, you don't know if they're sick, if they're asleep, or what's going on, you know? So communication all of a sudden changes. So, like digital nomads, they need to be a lot more autonomous when it comes to communicating. That's a really important thing. So they need to report up to the chain of command a lot more and have really good communication when it comes to what they're doing, what they're not doing, right? That's already a really big change because, like, when you're sitting across the room from somebody, you can walk over and look and see what they're doing, you know? But a really, really good digital nomad that's in the workplace will tell you what they're doing as they're doing it, when they're working and when they're not working, right? It also changes blurred lines between, like, when you're able to talk to them and not, because it's like you don't know what their schedule is quite as much. They might tell you, they might schedule a meeting with you, and that's fine. But in other times, like with my employees, like I always make sure like all the work stays within one communication channel. Therefore, if they're not working at a certain time, they can turn it off. And I don't respect, like I don't expect instant responses from them. I expect like I'll message them. I expect them to respond within about a day about something. If there's something I really, really need, I'll have someone on call for that, right? And I'll schedule that call. But generally speaking, things don't happen like that. It's a different culture, you know? So are companies prepared? I think it's hard. It's more of a measure of productivity and less of a measure of amount worked. You know what I mean?
Indeed. Tell me, so does it mean that a digital nomad, if that person doesn't like a corporation, let's say that imagine that tomorrow there is, I know, British American Tobacco, who wants to spend, make, give you like 5 months project. Does it mean that digital nomad has the freedom to say, no, I don't want this to deal with this tobacco company or whatever, another company, pharmaceutical or Nestlé because they are polluting the world, whatever. Do they have you seen that or have you done that to say no because that is not a good fit culturally or I mean in terms of purpose?
Yeah, have I done that? Yes. I say no to a lot of people. I think personality plays a big role. If you're not somebody I can foresee having a good, like for example, having a coffee or beer with you. If I can't have a coffee or beer with you, I probably don't want you as a client. You know what I mean? It's just my mindset, right? So, but I do see a lot of people, they kind of get stuck in that, oh, but I need the money or I need the security. And so they chase that anyway, and they kind of get pigeonholed into doing things that they don't really want to do just because they want that security or that like guaranteed paycheck from said corporation or whoever it is, right? But I don't think it's necessary. I think if you really try to get better every single day and you're good at what you do and you take it seriously, eventually you're going to be so good that you should have options. And if you don't have options, it just means that you're not talking to enough people. That's what I think.
I like that. I even had that the same thought process back in my early days as an entrepreneur. Let me get back about one keyword that you have used, this story with security, because it's normally human beings that we're scared. It's like already taking the decision to go to move to Latin America. A lot of Westerners, they think, oh, I'm going to get robbed. Yes, you will get robbed. But there is a high probability that you will get robbed. Oh, I don't know if I lose my job. And so this security thing, what would you say to someone who is considering going nomad, but is scared about how money flows, or even your parents might be scared of if they have to move in Latin America because there is a lot of crazy people.
Yeah, well, I mean, first I'd recommend, okay, well, if you're scared, why not just try like a short trip? Instead of doing like, you know, you just leave and you don't have a date to come back, why don't you just try like a month or two? Just see what it's like, you know? As far as getting robbed, I mean, there's some like simple rules, like go out super late at night. Don't pull out your phone in a part of town you don't know where you are. Don't wear a bunch of chains and really nice clothes. Maybe put on more conservative clothes. Leave your stuff at home, you know? Leave your passport at the house. Take a photo of it, right? Some stuff like that really help. They go a long way. Don't go looking for drugs. That's an obvious one anywhere in the world, right? So I think what a lot of people don't realize is like some of these first world countries are like a lot more dangerous than the third world country counterparts. You know, like United States, I don't know about you guys, but like it's dangerous. People walk around with guns and rob people all the time. All the time, you know? And chains, like here in Buenos Aires, like it's pretty safe. Like you can walk around with headphones in and like pull your phone out, and like the worst that's gonna happen is someone's gonna like snatch a purse and run, but they're not gonna pull a knife or a gun on you or anything like that. Like that doesn't happen here. It's actually really safe, you know? So I recommend they do that. And then in terms of the money thing, I mean, look, I'm gonna give you an analogy. If somebody kidnapped your son or kidnapped your mom and said, "Hey, you have 60 days to come up with X amount of money," would you do it? And the answer is yeah, of course you would. You'd figure out a way to do it. So, in the same turn, if you lost all your income tomorrow, like you just lost your job, regardless if you're in the United States or another country or whatever, would you find a way to get an income? The answer is yeah. You'd get on LinkedIn and you'd start messaging like 20, 30 people a day. You'd apply to 100 jobs a day, whatever. You'd spend your whole day every day applying and looking for opportunities, and you would find one, I guarantee it. So I don't see, like, I understand why people are scared, but having lost my income, like, God, like 7, 8 times now, like complete in India and Brazil and Ecuador, here in Argentina, like, way in the past. Like, I've been there. I've had my back against the wall, and it gives you a different energy. All of a sudden, like, it gives you a fire you didn't have before, and you use that fire to find opportunities, and everything turns out okay.
I totally get you, but the problem is that when you haven't built resilience, then you see like whenever this first thing happens, if something happens, I got robbed even a couple of hundred of dollars, then you think everything in a negative way, or trying to find a job, you think, yeah, I will not be able to find it. So this building of resilience sometimes can be done only through experience. So you have to experience it once. And it's not that easy. So somebody who is into the dark mode definitely will not get you. Will tell you, no. It's impossible to find a job at 40, at 50, or whatever, or outdated. But when you have you have built this resilience, this mindset that things are going to happen, then it's not because you believe in something higher that is protecting you, but it's more about that your way of looking at things is more as an options rather than close challenges, right?
I guess to that tune, to the people that like are a little bit more afraid, well then save up a little bit. Save up like a good like $10,000, or get a credit card, like an emergency one that you don't touch. You don't use it, but you carry it with you or whatever. You know, because like think about it, like if you're in Asia, $50 is a plane ticket in any direction. You know what I mean? If you're in South America, it's a little bit more expensive. But I mean, generally speaking, if you're in a bad situation, $1,000, $1,500 is gonna pretty much fix most situations. I mean, unless you like break your leg or something. But I mean, even if you break your leg here in Latin America, like in Argentina, healthcare is free. You know what I mean? So you could go to a private hospital and spend a little bit more, but I mean, Ecuador, you'd get your leg fixed for free. You know what I mean? Peru, depends. It depends on each country, you know? I mean, maybe take a flight to another country and then get it fixed. But generally speaking, I believe like 1 to 0.5, 2K will fix most situations. So you really don't need as much saved up as you think. You just need enough to get back to safety. That's really what it is.
A lot of corporations have find it challenging, in fact, to to deal with remote workforce. One, because they only see the options that they have currently available in order to sustain good communication, good collaboration. Now, as someone who is savvy in these stories with automation, use of technology in order to manage this communication and collaboration, what would you recommend? What technologies, tools can people use? Like, think about that you're giving the advice to a big ass corporation, not to another nomad. What should they use?
Number one is Loom or
That
like OBS. The ability to delete having a meeting and just record a quick 3-5 minute video and send it off allows teams to work asynchronously, which is what we do. So like if I ever need something, I just quickly Loom 2 minutes, say this, that, the other thing, bam. If he has questions, instead of him waiting for a meeting, he can send me a Loom back. And then I can respond to those questions directly via video. So that's number one. Number two, I think these tools like Slack or Discord for having asynchronous communications between the team and between the team members are really good. We run our entire company on Discord. I don't like Slack as much because it's very like bloated and there's a lot. And I just like Discord more, but that's a preference thing. You know, it's both the tools generally kind of do the same thing. I think those, and then like Notion or like ClickUp or something like that, like a project management tool. But I mean, most corporations, they already have those systems in place. So you just need to make a way for the employees to be able to access it remotely.
Indeed. Austin, I liked that you have mentioned Loom because in technology, the human side is quite important. So, and what I like about Loom is that when somebody looks at at a video that is short and you see a real person, it's better than hell writing a hell of a long email that doesn't look human and we don't even want to read it. So we will read the first 3 lines and we will miss the rest of the email. And a video in Loom can be done in one shot and you have a human being. So as you say, asynchronous. I can watch it whenever, when I need it, needed this information. So it's quite amazing. And now I think Loom has become a little bit more complex that you can do search on what has been said. So this is quite important. So it's not like a video where, oh, where can I find this information? I have to watch the full video. No, you can search and find the real part where there is the right information when you tell me, hey, Ivan, this is what you have to do today. Oh, he said, Ivan, oh, this is my part and I don't have to watch the rest of the video. That is quite helpful. I also well, I have been using Slack and Discord. I haven't been using it that much because I didn't know how to use it. I used it once, maybe. Notion, I use it quite a lot because in one shot, I can capture a lot of information, tag people, and even do tasks for a lot of people. And it's quite useful and quite cheap, in fact. This is what I like also.
Oh, I love Notion. Notion's my blank canvas, dude. Like, I have all our SOPs, everything, like instructions. I plan all my weekly sprints in there. Like, I'm very organized, but Notion's like my best friend for sure.
When you were describing your personal story, you said, okay, it was almost like an accident how you started your company. But for many of the digital nomads, it's about purpose because they didn't feel belonging when they had a corporate job. I don't even know, Austin, that if you had a corporate job before or you just went ahead into your life as an entrepreneur. But this purpose is also becoming quite important for in today's workforce in big ass corporation. Why do you think that has become more important in the like COVID happened and suddenly people are talking about purpose and before they were talking about money, status. Why do you feel? And it's not only in Gen Z or millennials, no, it goes even to the Gen X.
I think it's a big change in the way society has been developing, right? Because like before, there was like famines and You know, like if you think of like our parents and parents' parents, like grandparents, right? They were built around 9 to 5 work culture. They had to work every day to come home, to barely feed their kids, to go to work again, to blah, 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 blah. Nowadays, we have a big abundance of commerce, a big abundance of food in a lot of countries and things. And that leads to people having options and more time to be able to do other things. And I think having a purpose is really important, right? Whereas before, the purpose was like, I got to feed my family. Right now, a lot of people, they don't have to think as much about like how they're going to feed their family next week. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that do, obviously, but I'm talking more about like the people who aspire to be digital nomads and stuff. Like, yeah, I mean, you already have next week's, you know, grocery money squared away. You don't have to think about how you're going to eat tomorrow. So that leaves you open to think of like, hey, you know, what actual value do I want to bring to the world? How do I feel important? Where do I shine? And what do I love to do that brings that value, right? And so I think it's really important for a lot of people. Like I do have a very strong sense of purpose with this company, not only because like I now have like quite a few of my friends working with us that I want to make sure I take care of them. And you know that we're successful because of them, but also like I want to retire my parents, and like our premise is like I want to build other people's dreams. So people who come to join our company, like I want to build their dreams into reality. So if you want to lead a front-end development team, but you're just a junior developer, I want to build you up to that point so you can do what it is you want to do. You know what I mean? And so I think purpose is important among everybody. I really do. I just think that circumstances have changed and allowed us to free our minds to think of new things.
Exactly. And by the way, I just want to highlight because you mentioned about the story about having kids or having a family. There is 24% of digital nomads from the US who bring their families with them.
Oh yeah, I've
Amazing.
seen them. It's crazy. I met this one girl that traveled with 5 dogs. 5 dogs. Imagine that. That's crazy. Yeah.
So this big change that this 5 times more digital nomad in four years, it has created an emerging trend, and maybe it's also redefining the future of work because it's going to be tougher for corporations to acquire like the good talent if this good talent is thinking about purpose, working remotely from South America, Thailand. So they will have to change a couple of things. And today, I don't think they have changed so much, but they are not realizing yet how difficult it is to attract people and to attract digital nomads that might not be interested by big bucks. So it's not like because you are going to get $12,000 per month from Philip Morris that you will go work for them. So how do you see this the work environment changing to adapt to this trend, to attract it, to attract this talent? And also, secondary question about is education doing the right thing, or are they formatting people who are even more happy about life after university and they just want to get the hell and be free, and they are not preparing people in the right way? That two levels of the
Well, I don't think education is preparing people the right way just because it's so structured and it's structured like a job. You go to college, it's kind of like a job, you know? Like you have homework and deadlines and you got to be on time and need a certain amount of times and they'll dock you from the class, you know? And so I don't think that's very promoting of freedom, like in freedom of expression, right? Because freedom of expression, you'd be able to control your time, control a little bit more, and the levels of measure would be different, right? So companies, I mean, they have a lot to change. So the first major change is to get schedules out the window and to start measuring people more on productivity and less on the amount of hours worked. Like, because somebody could work 40 hours a week, right? I'll tell you, I can do 4 hours of work in a day and outwork people who work 8, 10 hours a day. Why? Because I've developed my mindset, I've developed my ability to focus, and a lot of things, right? And so, coming from an outside mindset, like a boss would be like, hey, you're not working enough. That doesn't make sense. Like, you gotta work the 40 hours a week. I'm like, well, yeah, I can, but then I'm gonna burn out my mind and then I'm gonna be less productive. It's
They don't give a
counterintuitive. You
shit,
think,
Austin. They don't give a shit.
yeah, they don't care. It's counterintuitive to think, hey, working less hours, you might be more productive. But, during those hours, like, I know when I have the most focus during the day. I know when I'm the most energetic. I know what times of day my body works, So, like, for example, I work better in mid-afternoons around this time, like, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4 p.m. That's my most productive time. In contrast, my business partner, Mateos, he works best at night. So he's gonna start working at 10, 11 o'clock at night. He's gonna work until 3, 4 in the morning. A totally different mindset, right? And coming from a company's point of view, they're not gonna do that. They're gonna be like, no, you gotta be in the office at like 9, or you gotta connect at this meeting at 10, or whatever. It's not a good measure. It's not a good measure. You gotta measure people on productivity instead. So there's so many changes that companies need to make just in the way they think about how work is done. It's a huge subject, man. It's a
It
huge
is a huge
subject.
subject, and I have the impression that there is a lack of understanding about our body cycles, about our psychology, what makes people happy, what makes people like that to develop this intrinsic motivation to do shit just for the hell of it. It's not about timings. It's like you guys being a digital nomads that, I mean, you have your motivation that doesn't come from the income that you're going to deliver. It's this. It could be the sense of purpose for some other people, might be something else. And corporations still haven't got this. They are still looking at the use of intellectual or cognitive resources, people who needs creativity, as it was a factory. So it's about time spent and quantity. While I think for people who are using constantly the brain, that is a killer for your productivity, because if
Oh,
you do the
yeah.
9 hours or 8 hours in a day, sometimes you are not productive, and you are just productive in 4 hours. And if you have that time, and then you have your recovery of energy, then you are at the optimal. But there is
Yeah.
not enough understanding.
No, there's not. I mean, you could think about it like working out. Like, okay, like if you were optimally working out, what would you do? Like 1, 2 hours a day, right? But if you did 5 hours a day, the next day, first of all, you'd be so sore you wouldn't be able to work out. Second of all, like you're gonna damage your muscles. It's kind of the same when it comes to work, like there's an optimal time, and if you push past that, there's like a burnout period where you're not going to rest anymore, and then all of a sudden, like, you just don't feel like doing it. Your mind is kind of foggy, you feel slightly tired or groggy, you have trouble focusing on things, right? And that recovery period's really, really important. Actually, I would argue recovery is almost more important than the work itself.
Indeed. And there is some misunderstanding. You don't recover just because you take your weekends out of work. You need constant mini micro pauses, breaks in order to recover, because otherwise your brain cannot function in an optimal way. And it's not holidays that will make you recover, because you come back and the level of stress spikes and maintain for a couple of days. So, and this is not healthy. Austin, I love the discussion that we have got today. And I wanted to ask you, if people have like questions, they want to reach you out, have a discussion either about this mindset that it takes to go into the nomad working, or to ask you even about what can you do for me in automation for digitalizing my company. How can they reach you out, Austin?
Yeah, absolutely. So on LinkedIn, you can search up Austin Reed. Or if you guys want to check out the website, it's horizon.dev. So it's super easy to remember. I'm always welcome to talk to people for free, help them out, do whatever. You know, I'm a very open guy. So if you want to just hop on a call and say like, hey, I'm looking to become a digital nomad, and like I'd like some advice and stuff, I can help you anything from like traveling to mindset to like just, you know, taking first steps and anything in between. So, you know, I'm always open.
Austin, I count on you. I will think about it. You know, to tell you the truth, at one moment I was considering going back to Peru, but then I got a little bit, I don't know, I needed more nature and I needed to feel a little bit more into an environment that it is less crowded. And
Yeah.
unfortunately, Lima is super
Lima is
crowded.
super crowded. Oh yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it's kind of hard to breathe, man. The air pollution there is pretty high, I have to admit.
Yes. So here I'm living in a small town of 500 people. There is no pollution. Yeah. Of course, without the great food in of Peru.
Yeah. Well, the food is amazing. That is true.
Austin, thank you very much for your time. Really lovely to discuss about how corporates can attract the digital nomad talent and discussing about working remotely and I mean, what is the life, the future of work when most of the good talent is going out there deciding on their own to work on to work on their own? Thank you, Austin, for your time.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate being here.